Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show. I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. We're pleased to be with you this Thursday evening. It is March 2nd, 2017. In just about 10 days, you're going to have to turn the clocks forward as we are passing winter and we're moving right into the next season. I'm over by the beach here in Long Branch, New Jersey, and yesterday was like a damn hurricane. My house almost blew over. I mean, it's really, really something. But in any event, we have a great show for you today. We've got Sean the Destroyer Loeffler. He's a friend of the program. He's a friend of mine. He's going to be on the program to give us an update on what he's got going on. He's an undefeated pro heavyweight boxer. He's one of the best fighters outside of the UFC. He really is a hot prospect and a really colorful personality, as fans that have listened to the show understand. He's going to be on the program. He's already called, and we're going to go to him. And he's also got another fighter on the card that's fighting coming up very, very soon in Pierre Williams, undefeated cruiserweight fighter that's on the program and is called in. So let's go to both of these guys right now, if we can. Not sure which is which, but I'm going to say this is Sean and Pierre. Welcome both to Carson's Corner.
How you doing, man?
Hello. Yeah,
how
are you doing, sir?
Good. Thank you for calling, guys. I really, really appreciate it. Sean, I'm going to kick it to you because you're one of the most active boxers out there. You've been fighting quite frequently, and the last time you probably fought was a few weeks ago. Tell us about, what you've got coming up. Tell us about this this card. We uploaded a picture of the card, but it's all in Spanish, so I can't understand if it's happening on March 9th. You gotta sort of fill me in there because you're probably able to speak Spanish. You've been in Mexico so long and so many times, you know.
Yeah, the fight is March 9th. Now anybody that's been to Tijuana, Mexico, which is right on the other side of the border in California, I mean the whole world knows that. So you just go over there. To tell you the truth, everybody says, oh, bring a passport. Me and Pierre and Coach Chris and Virgil Hill, he won the Olympic silver medal in 1984.
Yeah.
He goes down there with us. These guys that go down, we bring a driver's license, and we bring our fucking boxing gear, and we box. So and we're always treated great. I mean, we stay at these gorgeous 4 to 5 star hotels. We eat amazing for a 20-to-1 conversion rate, you know, of 20 pesos to $1. And then we're fighting on this the main road there, which is like the Sunset Strip in Hollywood. They have Revolution Boulevard in Tijuana. So we're fighting right on Revolution from Club Escape. And they've got tons of media. Boxing's no joke in Mexico. You know, you go out a Thursday night, and there's hundreds of people. They're screaming, and they're drinking their cervezas, and there's kids fighting amateur and pros, and there's media out, and there's posters for the fight, and they've got their own building for the commission just for boxing weigh-ins. So it's a cool deal. And me and Pierre are both a week from today, Bob, on that card, fighting some pretty good guys. My opponent has got 24 professional fights, so he's actually got over 118 professional rounds in. I've got 6 professional rounds in. He's from Sonora, Mexico, and his name is Miguel Ramirez, so that should be a great fight for me. And then Pierre's fighting a guy that just fought Paul Trevino from the 818 Fight Club up in L.A., and so Pierre's fighting a good cruiserweight fight too. But yeah, going down there, you speak a little Spanish, and then you kind of, you know, get it going from there.
You know, it's amazing because you contrast what we're doing here in the United States now, and I don't want to get political, but you know, it bears, we should mention that obviously the treatment of the Stepman, the increase of law enforcement, deportation of people here illegally, this being one of the cornerstones of the new Trump administration, their platform, and our fighters and our citizens, all they need to go to Mexico is a damn driver's license, and they're treated like rock stars here. It's really, really something to contrast.
It really is, and because of the economy, but when, you know, because to be honest, they like us down there, not only because there's not a lot of guys, and Pierre can talk about this in a second, but it's a ballsy experience going into Tijuana and fighting, because you're fighting tough guys down there. You know, you're not, and you're fighting, you know, you're fighting. So it's definitely different. So they appreciate you. And when you spend, you know, some of your hard-earned American money on their stuff, whether it's a T-shirt or a photograph that they took of you or a magazine, they appreciate it. So they do treat you well, because you, hopefully, us as Americans, go to another country, especially a third world country, and we treat them well with respect, you know, and have understanding. But what do you think, Pierre?
And honestly, I feel like we get treated great down there. In some aspects, we get treated better in Mexico than we do in the United States, I believe. So I think it's a great experience. And I love fighting down there.
And without being too political, I'm a fucking tattooed white guy, as everybody knows, and Pierre is black. He's an African-American guy from Chicago. So we have, and we're both, you know, we're like brothers and teammates, obviously, best friends. But that's coming from a black dude going down to Tijuana and a tattooed white dude going down to Tijuana. People are a lot nicer than most of the people in San Diego.
You know, and Chicago, too, you hear about boxing prospects being shot and killed in Chicago. So, you know, and you've got the police shootings and whatnot, really all across America of African Americans. So I definitely think in one aspect people are treated better in Mexico, and we could talk about other issues too. But Pierre, I'm on your Twitter page right now, and I'm following you. And if I'm not mistaken, on your left arm, you looks like you got an awesome tattoo of the man himself, Malcolm X. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, I got Malcolm X, and then, like, on my tricep, I have Martin Luther King.
That's dope.
That is awesome. Yeah, that is one of my favorite pictures of Malcolm, because he looks so stoic, and he like, looks almost right through you in that picture. Now, you also have a picture of a female, but on my computer, I don't know if it's just my browser, I can't see the top of her head, and it's somebody that I look like I want to see the top of her head. She looks like a fine, fine female boxer. Can you tell us who that is?
that's actually my wife. And she, we took those pictures. Like, my brother does, like, photography. We just wanted to take some pictures and put them up. So it turned out good, so we ran with it.
Yeah. Does she box or no?
Nah, she doesn't box. She's a full-time student, and we're having our sixth kid, so she's six.
Six kids!
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, she definitely looks like she works out, and that's great for you guys. I mean, to have that and to keep that all together is just something admirable itself. Pierre, you're actually listed on BoxerX, and what do you know about your opponent? I think Sean just mentioned him. I'm not sure if he mentioned him or a previous opponent.
Well, to be honest, like, I know he fought in December, and he fought a guy from the 818, Paul Trevino, and that's about as much as I know. I caught some glimpses of the fight, but hey, when I fight, I usually don't get caught up into who I'm fighting because I'm more concerned with what I can do to them, and I really don't bother myself or concern myself with them. I just show up to fight, honestly. So I don't really know a lot about them.
That's admirable, because I know
Pierre's
so many fighters that are... Go ahead, Sean.
I was saying, Pierre's last fight, Bob, was actually on the same card as my last fight, where I fought that King Kong Sosa guy, and Pierre had a great fight, maybe the fight of the night. It went all four rounds. It was a majority decision, so about as close as you can get with still getting the decision for Pierre. The guy knocked Pierre down once. They went back and forth. It was a great fight, by the way.
Yeah, it was a good, tough fight, and I enjoyed it. I learned a lot from it, and it was a great experience. It was a real good fight.
Now, where you guys train respectively at different camps. Pierre, give us an idea of your training situation. Where do you train? Sean mentioned Virgil Hill. That's obviously a very, very notable name in the world of box. I mean, even I know Virgil Hill, you know, from his various fights. So give people at home an idea of your training picture.
Well, my training right now, like my main gym is I train out of the compound, Sean's gym, and he's like my chief sparring partner, training partner. So 90% of my training is with Sean and our head coach, Chris Getz, and if we ever need to get different looks for different type of opponents, we'll go out or venture out and get sparring from different gyms. But 90% of it is on Chris Getz, and Sean's my main training partner.
That's a good training partner to have.
And Chris Getz, hey, I'll tell you, for people that don't know, I mean, Chris Getz is legendary in kickboxing and old school boxing. You know, he's a pro boxer. And pro kickboxer, fought like Rick Rufus and guys like that. Not only is he a legend from Philadelphia in the pro boxing world back in the day and a great boxing coach and brought up some real good boxers, but it's pretty awesome because, like, any boxers know, like, the Hearns jab, where some people will call it, like, they'll look at Floyd Mayweather do it, or they'll call it the shoulder roll or the lazy jab, but it's a Hearns jab, you know, where you drop that arm and you jab. That's what it's called. And it's funny because I'll be talking to Chris about, like, oh, man, coach, I've been trying to work, you know, really work the Hearns jab, especially when I switch to southpaw. And then Chris Getz, because he's such a fucking veteran, he's like, I remember being in an elevator with Tommy in Atlantic City. We both fought. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, you know, it's just a cool thing that I'm talking about the Hearns jab. He's talking about the conversations him and Tommy Hearns had in elevators when they were both fighting. So we got the right coach, you know.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That's always is good to have a coach with such a wealth of experience. Sean, I got to ask you a few things that I've been meaning to ask you for a little while now, and I haven't had the opportunity to. You were supposed to fight Shannon the Cannon Rich, very, very well-known MMA fighter, has over 100 fights. I believe you were supposed to fight him last month. However, Shannon, if I'm not mistaken, ended up taking a fight on the Roy Jones Bobby Gunn championship fight from a few weeks ago. Is that basically what happened? Is that he pulled out to take a boxing match, or did something different happen there?
Dude, okay, we're getting into some controversy, and I'm glad you're doing this, Bob, because I can fucking talk some shit. Dude, no offense to Shannon Rich, I know that fucker's got like 200 fights. That motherfucker's got a lot of fights, and he's great and whatever, blah, blah, fucking blah. Straight up, man, he signed a fight with me. I was on the motherfucking telephone because Aaron Brink didn't show up to fight Shannon. So I said, I'll fucking fight Shannon to make up for this, for the Gladiator Super Fight heavyweight belt. And I was like, that's fine. I've knocked out Aaron Brink. I've knocked out Pat Smith. I've knocked out John Tarr. I've knocked out all the guys with winning records that have UFC experience you put in front of me. So let me fucking fight Shannon fucking, you know, the Cannon Rich. Shannon gets on the fucking phone, confirms the fight, sends Ted Williams right. a picture for the poster. I send Ted Williams a picture for the poster. Then 10 days before the fight, Ted's like, I got terrible news. Shannon said he's taking a fight for good money on the Roy Jones Jr. boxing card. And I'm like, well, let me hit up, which this is a perfect segue to the next section, by the way, Bob. But I'll get back to that. But so Shannon supposedly gets hit up to do a fight there. I hit up Jesse Varela and Tony Hua and the people that work with RJJ and Rebel T Promotions. They're like, I don't know. So I don't even know if he fucking fought, because I saw pictures of his upper body there, but I didn't see pictures of his fight. I didn't see results on his fight. I didn't see video on his fight. I think
no.
he fucking got – I didn't see any results on BoxRec. I didn't see any fucking thing that he boxed. I think what happened is that his heart muscle was attached to his pussy muscle, and he didn't want to fucking fight Sean Loeffler, and so he pulled out. Because I wanted that fight, and I trained fucking hard for that fight, and he told me he was going to take that fight. So if that fucking fool hears this fucking message, anytime, anywhere, anyone that knows me, I will fucking knock him out, and that's why he fucking didn't take the fight. Because he goes, Sean Loeffler is fighting, like, hardcore Mexican boxers and pro boxers. He's 6-0, 6 first-round knockouts. His fucking last 10 MMA fights have been knockouts. He's going to fucking end my life. And so he shouldn't have accepted the fight in the first place, because it kind of heated me, because I was done with MMA. I did that as a fucking favor to fucking to Shannon, because Aaron didn't show up for that fight to be a man of my word and say, you deserve a fight, let's give you a fight, you know? So that kind of irks me, because fighters fight, and to pull out 10 days before, especially on an event, even if he was getting more money for the Roy Jones Jr., whatever, fucking who cares? You signed a contract. Uphold your contract. You know what I mean?
Now, okay, right. Now, he didn't fight because his fighter, the guy that he was supposed to fight, didn't have blood work. He said he was already signed to fight in pro boxing on the Roy Jones Jr. fight. So he just to clarify, no, he didn't fight at all. And that's
yeah,
so,
exactly. Exactly. He could have fought me. We were set, ready to go. They had nothing set in stone. The dude fucking, you know, I guess I'm the boogeyman. Maybe he thought I tattooed my face on the inside of his eyelids. I don't know, but yeah, that pissed me off. And I love MMA and stuff, but it's once again that kind of sour taste. I walk away from fucking MMA, come back to fight a guy with 200 fights that they're promoting me for. There was a shit ton of people in Palm Springs to see me fight too. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that happens. And I'm not just going to fight a random fill-in. Those days of Sean Loeffler fighting a 1-3, a 3-3, a 4-6, those days are long over since the UFC and Bellator and pro boxing. If I'm fighting, I'm fighting world champions, big famous guys, you know?
Now, Aaron Brink, can you talk about what happened? Apparently he's fallen on hard times again.
Yeah, I guess he was training at the gym for a little bit, and then – you know,
right.
shit happens, and you know, addiction and substances and hard life is hard on everybody, you know. And some people have that personality where they can't shake it, and others have a little bit more of a strong will where they focus. And Pierre trained with Aaron, too. You know, we're both friends with Aaron and care about him, and we wish him the best. But at the same time, we got to put ourselves in an environment and the people in our environment that are professional athletes trying to be at the top level of the sport, which he was for a little bit. But since he's not, you know, we just go our separate ways and we focus. We got a young kid named Tolo that's a good Samoan kid coming up. We got James Cannon. He's a 4-2 pro MMA fighter, was fourth in the nation in wrestling. He's like 6'3", 220. And then Pierre can tell you a little bit about his brother and stuff. His brother's been helping us out a lot, too.
Todd, my brother, he trains out of Victory in San Diego. He's an up-and-coming MMA fighter. He hopes to, he should be debuting in the next couple months. But he comes in and he runs the corners. He's always in my corner for my fights and Sean's fights. And we have a good team. We have a good thing going at the compound. And it's like more like a family as opposed to like just a bunch of guys who train together, because we look out for each other and we see each other outside of the gym. We watch fights at Sean's house. And Sean, honestly, that's, I think like me come being a part of the compound was a blessing. And I think my career is going to thrive there. My career, Sean's career, all his fighters, we're going to take over fighting, boxing, MMA, whatever.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
You know, I hear that a lot. I hear that from so many fighters. I heard that from Aaron, who definitely felt that way. And it seems like you definitely have a real positive atmosphere over there at the compound. Pierre, give people at home an idea of your journey to boxing. How did you end up becoming a professional boxer?
Well, I started off like as a kid. The first gym I ever went to was Chris Getz. He owned Black Tiger for like over 20 years. I went there. I was like, Chris, I want to be a Thai boxer. Like, I love Thai boxing. And like Craig the Bullet Buchanan was like my favorite fighter in the world. I was like, man, I want to be just like him. And I used to watch like the kickboxer movies, reruns over and over. And I was like, I'm going to kickbox. That's it. So we went down. He trained me like for 2 months. He entered me in a Muay Thai fight in like Imperial Beach in San Diego. I went in there and I didn't throw one punch, but I stopped the guy. Like, you know, I threw two right hands and they stopped the fight. I knocked him out. So then after that, he talked to me. He's like, what do you think about boxing? I was like, I don't. I want to be a Thai fighter. But that Monday, we went back. We started training. He started training me in boxing. And then I've been boxing ever since. I fell in love with that. Then I would do some amateur fights. And then when I was 18, I joined the Army. And I did two tours of Iraq over there. Then I got out the Army. I was just trying to do my family life. Like, I wasn't going to fight again. Then I picked up a couple more amateur fights. And I was in and out of the gym because I had family. I was working. And then now I got back into the gym with Sean. I met Sean. I started training at the compound off and on. And then I got serious within the last year. And I debuted with Sean out of his gym. And ever since then, I don't plan on stopping until I get a belt.
Yeah, Pierre, Bob, eventually Pierre will be super middleweight. You know, he's at cruiserweight right now, so he's got a big-ass frame, but we'll bring him all the way down light heavyweight next, obviously. That, you know, he's 2-0, he's going to be 3-0, so he's a talented kid, I'll tell you that much. Today, in fact, by the way, fuck you, Pierre. Today he hit me with the hardest shot he's ever hit me with in sparring by far. We've been sparring for a couple, you know, a year plus now. And I always tell him, I'm like, man, your right hand, unleash that right hand. And I fucking wish I wouldn't have told him that a couple of weeks ago, because he hit me with that right hand today, and I was like, yeah, that was the best shot you ever hit me with.
Because I used to go in there like Sean, because he has a good right hand himself, and it'll make you a little gun shy to just jump in there. Because at first when we started sparring and getting together, he wasn't really boxing. He would just pop you one shot to get you out of there. But now, like, if you go in there and watch him now, hey, it's night and day. He can box with you. He can get you out of there. So it's really competitive between us. Like, we know each other's style, so we can go back and forth all night. It's real fun.
Yeah, me and Pierre made each other a lot better. We're like we're the generic Amos and Andy, the black and white, great white hype, great black hope. Like, we go back and forth, and he is, I mean, it's like perfect pace, and we work hard. And we've got so many other guys, though, at the compound. Not to shout out, you know, say compound, my gym, but we do. We've got, you know, Selena Flores, who's an up-and-coming, she's the world Muay Thai champion right now for the IKF, you know, I mean, like the WCK champion. So we've got, you know, we got Dylan Bartram, Ollie Joffre, and Josh Gilbert all fighting in Burbank at this new Defiant MMA show. So we have so many people here, whether it's MMA, Muay Thai, boxing, you know, the wrestlers, to work with us and push us. So it's pretty nice. And then me and Pierre are like, you know, everybody, you know, you have that one training partner for boxers. I think it happens more often than MMA. where they get that one training partner close to their weight, and we work and come close. You know, we showed up with our coach Chris, with Chris Getz and his brother, and we watched Andre Ward, you know, fight, the Kovalev Andre Ward. We get together and we talk about these things, and we eat food together and hang out. We hang out an extra day in Mexico having fun. And so, you know, it's hard to stop a good team, you know, when you got a good team, especially when we're going to a different country.
You know, Sean, you had said that you're done with MMA. What about you, Pierre? Do you have any type of inclination of fighting in mixed martial arts in the future?
No, to be honest with him, it's not my thing per se, but I've, like, grappled with my brother and wrestled, and hey, it's real tiring. I think it's a great sport. I enjoy watching it, and it's entertaining, but it's not for me. Boxing's where I belong, but I'll leave MMA to the MMA fighters. I enjoy watching it, though.
And to his brother.
Is he fighting for Gladiator Challenge, or?
I don't know. I think he's just going to debut. There's no set date, but he's training hard, and he's a real good fighter. He has a lot of pop in his hands because he looks bigger, but he's a small – fights at 155, but he looks a lot bigger.
He's,
like, you peg him for,
jacked.
Like, 190. Yeah, he's jacked, but he's really like a 155-er.
Hey, Carson, you know what his brother's like? His brother reminds me of the lightweight version of Anthony Johnson, man. Like 195, black dude, jacked as a motherfucker, tattoos, thug, but like smart, you know, and comes power. You're like, oh, man. And then he drops to 55. So I think he's going to be a lot like Rumble Johnson.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I don't think the 155-pound division in any organization has an Anthony Rumble-like fighter out there.
Exactly. Exactly. No, exactly. No. Hey, so the little segue I was going to make about the Shannon Rich thing, which that guy will never fight me, so it doesn't matter. So I'm just going to obviously be sticking with boxing. That was like a favor to somebody else who didn't pan out for me. And I was just staying at, and it would have just been like hard sparring. And it's funny, I told everybody with that fucking MMA fight, everybody's like, what's your plan? You're going to throw head kicks? You're going to throw knees? You're going to choke somebody out since you haven't been able to do that? I was like, fuck no. I'm going to wear 4-ounce gloves and box the shit out of him. I'm not going to throw one kick. I'll wear boxing shoes. And he's going to be like, I fucked up. Like, because I know how to sprawl. I know how to defend a takedown. So if you watch a pro boxer in MMA against a 40-year-old man, that would be bad news. Come on, you know. I mean, he knows that. He's 5'8". He's smart enough to know that. He's the one to end up like past Smith or Aaron Brink, you know. So the fact of the matter is that's that. But the segue I was going to make is my big fight is April 15th. I'm fighting at the Anaheim Convention Center on the Roy Jones Jr. Boxing Promotion card. I'm the semi-main event. I'm the co-semi-main event. It's on TV. We got some amazing, amazing fighters on that card. Brian Vasquez, he's 35-2 lightweight. Ronald Ellis, he's a 14-0 undefeated super middleweight. Then you have me fighting Sean Loeffler. I'm fighting Oswaldo Ortega, a guy with 6 fights from Mexicali, Mexico. You got Ricardo Sandoval, 6-1. Flavio Rodriguez, 6-0. And Flavio, Bob, is fighting Nam Phan, the Ultimate Fighter guy, who's 3-2 in boxing.
Oh, wow. I didn't know Nam Phan was fighting boxing.
Yeah, he's 3-2-1 in pro boxing as a welterweight. And that's for Roy Jones Jr. Boxing Promotions with Tony Hua, with Keith Veltri and Roy Jones Jr., obviously. And that's at Anaheim, California, Saturday, April 15th, from the Anaheim Convention Center. So that's my big American debut that we just broke to the world on your show.
Yeah, that's really exciting news because I know you were it was only a matter of time before you were going to penetrate the U.S. market, and the fact that it's going to be on TV. And, you know, you'll probably, I would imagine, I mean, have you signed with his, is this just a one-fight agreement, or are you going to have multiple fights going forward?
Let's me and Pierre, obviously, Coach Chris Getz and the Compound crew, my dad, we can't say too much, Gabriel Quinones and Tony Hua, but let's put it this way. This is going to be a 2 or 3 fight deal, and if everything goes the way it should for the next 2 or 3 fights, there's going to be a super fight set up where, let's just put it this way, people are talking about Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, and that's interesting because they're both champions and they're both really – they're huge, the biggest names in their sports. But Conor hasn't fought forever. Floyd's retired. Well, there's some other names out there, like MMA guys, like Sean Loeffler, who I'm going to be 7-0, going on 8-0 after my fight at the Anaheim Convention Center. I'm an 8-0 pro boxer. And there's other pro boxers out there with names like Floyd Mayweather, guys like, I don't know, you know, Roy Jones Jr. maybe. So if you want to see MMA versus boxing and that raises your eyebrows, well, it's interesting when 157.5 guys fight, right? Well, it's a lot more interesting when heavyweights and 195 guys fight, like Sean Loeffler and Roy Jones Jr. So who knows? You know, that we've got a commitment to them and a plan, and anything's possible. And I think it's going to be one of the biggest steps in combat sports, and we're going to be the real front runners to actually do something when it gets all said and done. We're not going to talk and go on TMZ and show watches and show sparring and show fucking focus mitts while we're drunk with our buddies in fucking Ireland. What we're going to do is we're going to fight like people have been doing, like Roy's been doing, like other guys, Adrian Broner's been doing, Adonis Stevenson, Chad Dawson, you know, Sean Loeffler, Pierre Williams. We're going to fight. And we're going to actually get it on. We're not just going to talk. So let's just put it this way. If things go the way it's planned, everybody's jaw is going to drop, and it'll be a dream come true for a little white kid from L.A.
You know, Sean, you bring up a really, really good point, is this whole idea of MMA versus boxing, because, you know, obviously the most talk is surrounded Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Conor McGregor getting a boxing license, and then the Nevada State Athletic Commission actually reviewing a potential fight. But it just seems like a dream, like a pipe dream, because there's nothing ironed out. The UFC is not going to allow Conor to fight. There's so many obstacles going forward. But you, on the other hand, you are already a professional boxer, and of course you have an MMA background. So do you consider yourself really a real representation of MMA? Like, this is what really an MMA versus a boxing match would look like under boxing rules?
I think that, but I guess the justice and the real people that get to judge that are the guys like Bob Carson and the media. You know, the SureDog.com, the MixedMartialArts.com, the BoxRec.com, the Deontay's Boxing Nation, the MMA beatdown shows and Rogue Nations. So all of those shows are going to be the ones that make that moniker on me or not. I think I'm the most established MMA boxer right now that's doing something. There's another guy that's doing some good stuff in boxing that was an MMA fighter up in Canada, but he's at a lower weight, and they're not pushing him the way they're pushing me, and he's still dabbling in MMA as well, not so committed to the boxing. So I think it's for the media to decide, and for guys like Pierre Williams, who's just a pro boxer, for him to decide, you know, and obviously it's not going to be for him because he's not going to be unbiased, but other pro boxers, other MMA fighters in the media, you guys will decide if something like Sean Loeffler, Roy Jones Jr., which who knows, you know, everything's possible, is the real representation of MMA versus boxing, which I think it is, because we, you know, having Floyd versus Conor, that could turn into a real red herring, slippery slope, sideshow, circus act real fucking fast. And who knows how legit that's going to be. Well, I fought in Bellator. I did the Ultimate Fighter stuff. I was signed to the UFC, King of the Cage champion, you know, RJJ, silver medalist, two-time Golden Gloves champion, 10-time champion, only 5 division champion ever to win a fucking middleweight and a fucking heavyweight championship. So I've got 11 MMA championships, black belts in jiu-jitsu. We are the real workhorses of this industry, you know. He was doing rap music and boxing. I'm doing MMA and now boxing. So we both had our side endeavors, and you know, something like that I think is a much more better representation than 2 fucking guys that love social media yapping about shit.
Well said. You raise a lot of good points there. Pierre, anything that you want to add to what Sean was saying?
Hey, I think it would be, hey, honestly, I'd much rather see Sean Loeffler versus Roy Jones than McGregor versus Mayweather. Because they're doing it for the money. I think like Sean and Jones will be doing it just because they love the fight. And that's what I want to see. Like, I don't want I don't want it to be like a sideshow. That's why I think it'd be a good fight. Two fighters who really love to fight, fighting their craft, and I think it'd be good for the sport.
And Roy Jones. God.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, Bob. Not to, you know, agree, obviously, with, like, my best friend and training partner and shit. But the other thing, like Pierre said, too, that gives it more authenticity is, like, yeah, Roy Jones, you know, is worth $20 million, and I own a gym and stuff, so it's not, neither one of us are rubbing nickels together. You know, we both have our shit together. But we have a lot more to fight for and a lot less to lose. Floyd Mayweather has everything to lose. Conor McGregor has everything to lose when it comes to, if he gets embarrassed, like really embarrassed, where he doesn't land a punch, that makes him a joke, you know? And if Floyd Mayweather somehow even gets knocked down or loses one round, that makes him a joke. So they both, if it ever does happen, like Pierre just said, it's a circus act. They both have to fight so fucking safe and almost orchestrated to where it can't fuck up their millions of dollars because of image. Well, me and Roy don't give a fuck. He's a fucking rapper. I'm a fucking gangster from LA covered in tattoos. And we can fucking bang. And people will be like, damn, these are two veterans that are going at it for boxing and MMA back and forth. And just, you know, we're not in it for the, I don't even have a fucking Instagram. You know, we're not in it for that. We're in it to, like Pierre said, we're in the fight.
Yeah, well, you know, he's expressed interest in fighting MMA fighters, Anderson Silva. And you know, from Roy Jones Jr.'s perspective, it could only be in his best interest if he's looking to fight an MMA fighter, someone who has an MMA background and can be a representative of MMA, to fight you, because there's really going to be no disagreements on the rules. I mean, when you talk about Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather, there's so much discussion what type of rules they're going to have. Are they going to have, is it going to be like a Antonio Inoki, Muhammad Ali fight? It's just this and that. No, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you'll fight Roy Jones really essentially at his own game. 100%. And you'll let the fans decide. Whereas, you know, look, everybody acknowledges, I think every serious-minded analyst acknowledges that Floyd Mayweather would, in just straight up boxing, would absolutely destroy Conor McGregor. McGregor would be a poor, yeah, and he would be a poor representation of the sport. He would make the sport look bad. Whereas your fight versus Roy Jones, well, I think whatever the outcome is, because of the way that it's being conducted, because of the way you're doing it, would not be a bad representation of the sport. No question about that. Win, lose, or draw. And so.
Yeah, he's been an active fighter. He's an active boxer, and I'm boxing people that, you know, some of the guys have upside-down records. I fought a guy that was, you know, 5-21. I fought a guy that was 1-7. But these guys have been boxing for 10, 15 years with 60 fights, you know, amateur, and then they're 1-7 pro or whatever. So they've gone 118 rounds, and now I'm stepping up my competition every fight. You know, this guy's got 24 fights that I'm fighting. And the fact of the matter is, this guy, yeah, his name's Daniel Ramirez. Daniel Ramirez. So these guys that I'm fighting, like you said, I'm actually building a boxing career to get to be 10-0, to then say to my promoters at Roy Jones Jr. Promotions and Rebel T Promotions, hey, you know, I think it's time to see if we can make some fucking money, and why would it make money? Because people are interested. I'm doing it, and you're doing it still, and we're still relevant, and we can still put on a hell of a fight, you know, me and Roy. I think I will knock out one of my heroes in Roy Jones Jr., and he will laugh at that and roll his eyes, and that's why I'm here, but they signed me for a reason, you know, and so I'm here. And another cool thing about the fight at the Anaheim Convention Center is Virgil Hill is putting on the line the new ABO World Heavyweight Championship belt, which is a vacant title out of Chicago, of all places, and the American Boxing Organization had some really good up-and-comers, about 200,000 followers on social media, and Virgil Hill's involved, so that's going to be a huge honor to represent that, because it's not just an ABC organization, you know?
What about, I want to ask both of you guys the idea of bare-knuckle boxing. We've seen MMA fighters that you know are still competing in the sport of mixed martial arts, and perhaps maybe they're not making the money that they feel that they should be going to bare knuckle boxing.
I thought Joe Riggs do that.
Yeah, Joe Riggs, Melvin Gillard.
I saw that.
Other fighters too as well. Was that really on the horizon possibly for either one of you?
No.
No, I don't foresee myself going outside and fighting somebody with my bare hands unless I was put in a situation to defend myself or my family or my loved ones. Other than that, when I throw a punch, my hand will be covered in a glove and hand wraps.
Yeah, so I mean, Pierre's right. The thing is about bare knuckle boxing, it really doesn't prove any more toughness. It's because MMA, guys hit harder in MMA than bare knuckle boxing, because in MMA your hands are protected more. They're wrapped and then have a 4-ounce glove. So you're actually swinging with more reckless abandon with an MMA glove than fucking bare knuckle. My hands are hurt all the fucking time. Pierre knows that. All my training partners know that. Even my opponents know that. I don't care. I'm still fucking hitting you with them. My hands are hurt all the fucking time. So I can't imagine bare knuckle or just tape hitting somebody's bone, top of their head, hitting their elbow if I miss, you know, with just to break my hand. The reason boxing gloves were invented were not to protect the face, to protect the hands so fights could last longer. They originally made boxing gloves out of horse hair, which were hard, so they could just make fights last longer. They're not protecting faces, they're protecting hands. So it's just kind of a skeptical, like blood sport, dipping your hands in glass or whatever. And side note, and Joe Riggs is a friend of mine. I didn't say an acquaintance, not a fucking friend, but an acquaintance. He was, like, throwing elbows and did takedowns and shit in that fight. And he apologized for it after a super class act, super, super class act interview afterwards. I do have to say that. One of the classiest fucking things I've ever heard. He's like, I don't even deserve this. I double-legged him and then elbowed him. I threw a Superman punch. He was out of his element, which that guy was probably tripping, thinking at any other time this guy could double-leg him again or fucking elbow him. So, so that was a class act by Joe, but yeah, it's a spectacle. There's no money to be made in bare knuckle boxing compared to MMA in reality, unless you're over the hill or, you know, not being able to compete at the top level, in my opinion.
Well said. I agree. I definitely agree with those sentiments, and I did see that fight, and it was unfortunate. He was very apologetic too. Even after he did that, and the referee was really, really pissed at Joe Riggs. I guess it was just instinct, but yeah, obviously you have to respect the rules of the competition that you're in and whatnot. So it's 2017, obviously it's a new year. How many times this year do both of you guys plan on competing?
Well, I plan on, hopefully my goal was to, by the end of the year, I want to fight at least 5 more times after March, and that's my goal for the year. So hopefully I get to 8-0 by the end of the year.
And Sean?
Well, I'm 6-0 now. On Thursday, I'll be 7-0. I fight at the Anaheim Convention Center on April 15th, and then I'll be 8-0. I'm thinking of taking a fight in the Midwest, maybe, you know, where the ABO championship is from out there somewhere. Maybe Virgil, or there's a guy named Bill Glasser out of New York, a very famous boxing agent that's been – he's got cancer, by the way. All prayers out to fucking Bill. Because he's been fighting chemo and cancer, and he's an icon in boxing, and he's been helping me out a lot. He hasn't been able to be as proactive as he wants to be because of his family and his health, which I totally understand. But when he starts getting more involved, you know, that's one of the – and obviously nobody's this big, but he's almost like an Al Heyman-ish, you know. So those guys are helping me out immensely, and I'm thinking 10-0. And like I said, I'm not going to be one of these social media call people out things, because I think there's a plan in place. I don't have to make a grudge match with Roy Jones Jr. when they find me to their boxing promotion. We've spoken about the prospect of a real MMA versus a real boxer. I'm doing it the right way. I'm licensed and sanctioned. So I think if I continue to put a grind in and train hard, I can at least get enough of the 10-fight experience, 10-0, 10 knockouts, which is marketable. And I've got – nobody's going to say, oh, he's a paper champion. Maybe so. You say that in boxing, but then you look, well, no, he's not, because he's got like a fucking 100 MMA fights, and he's done all this and that. So I've got real pedigree just like him. So I'm thinking at 10-0, we look for a big November, December pay-per-view, and we see, you know, what could happen if a top-level MMA face a top-level boxer at, you know, when they're 35, 38 years old. So not necessarily aged and not necessarily spring chickens, but right at where we're mature, we know what we want to do, and we're in decent enough shape to put on an amazing show, you know? That's my plan.
Yeah, it does sound like a plan. It really does. And, you know, it's good that you guys got really good positive camaraderie at the compound. You're able to feed off of each other and support each other, because I know that, you know, with anything, if you have someone that's going through the same thing you're going through in training the same way and essentially has almost the same goal that you have, it's probably easier to do it than if you're just totally isolated and just completely on your own. You know, it's difficult to find that support mechanism. So it's I wish both of you guys the best of luck. I really do. Anything else, Sean, that you want to give out to the fans here before we wrap it up?
Yeah, you know, the last thing I'm going to say to the fans, whatnot. One is I want to give a shout out to obviously Chris Getz in the compound, the gym, and my boxing coach Gabriel Quinones, the promoter down there, and Tony Hua and Roy Jones Jr. Boxing Promotions. You know, I'm signed with Roy Jones Jr. Boxing Promotions and Rebel T, and we're gonna look for big things in the future and more knockouts. Real quick, like I always have to do, and I appreciate people giving love to the people that give love to me. That's Asara. So that with a D, Datsusara, they make these hemp gear for Victory, these modern style, sustainable sports travel options. They have been super supportive of my boxing career. Body Armor USA and Ben Rackman on the East Coast, they sponsor like the Showbox and the Thursday night fights, the Friday night fights, and they're even giving me love and helping me out. And then Blackout Fight Gear is the only gear that the IKF and kickboxing allows for the pads to be used in competition and their boxing stuff. So they've been sponsoring me, and then finally, obviously, War Fuel is this awesome company for hydration, and those companies have made it to where I can travel to Mexico, I can travel to Minnesota or Chicago to do these fights and get my coaches there and stuff. So people and fighters that know those companies that are coming up, helping these young guys, they're the next Nikes, and they're the next Gatorades, and they're the next, you know, power bars, because they're getting behind the people that are the next Floyd Mayweathers, are the next Conor McGregors, are the next, you know, Sean Loeffler versus Roy Jones Jr. So big shout out to my sponsors and my coaches, obviously, and then Pierre, obviously, his fight, and everybody, Bob Carson is the fucking shit. You put on such an awesome show, and you have awesome guests, and you're a worldwide audience, and you enable guys like me and Pierre to come on. So yeah, I want to give thanks to guys like you, because that's what makes this to where we can communicate, you know?
Thank you very much. Pierre.
Well, I'm going to keep it short. I just want to thank Chris Getz, Sean, Compound MMA, everybody I trained with, sparred with, did mitt work, my brother. And I want to thank you for letting me be a part of your show, Bob. And I also want to give a shout-out to my sponsor, GopWorks. And I want to tell my wife, Deborah, that I love her. And she's my soulmate, and because it was our anniversary yesterday, and I just want to tell you I love you, and that's it.
Awesome.
Oh, congratulations, man. That's really, really good to hear you say that. And look, both of you guys are welcome on the program anytime in the future. We'd love to hear from you as your careers move forward and you start to get to those real championship fights. And really, it was a pleasure meeting you, Pierre. And I encourage everyone, if they can, to follow you on Twitter. Just type in Pierre. Let's see where I have. So Pierre Williams on Twitter.
Yeah, Pierre Williams.
Okay, yeah, that's the path, and I'm following you on Twitter, and other people can as well follow you there. So again, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you sometime down the road, both of you.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Take care, guys. All right, ladies and gentlemen. That was Sean Loeffler and Pierre Williams here, undefeated cruiserweight boxer, and very, very proud. That was 50 minutes of good. Anytime we have Sean Loeffler on the program, It flies by very, very quickly. All right, we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Michael Bisping now is fighting George St. Pierre. It's a real disgrace. I'll tell you, you know my feelings on it. It's so disappointing to see this fight. And I hope it backfires on the UFC. And we're going to talk about UFC 209. I am interested to see some of the fights on this card. We'll get to some of the news and some of the commentary on UFC 209 taking place in Las Vegas this weekend, March 4th. So we'll be right back after this brief timeout here. On Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. Again, big thanks to Sean Loeffler and Pierre Williams for calling on the program. We have a lot to get to here in the world of mixed martial arts. We've the biggest surprise announcement, and this is just so disgusting. I got to tell you, my stomach turned when I heard this news because I've been following this, and everybody wants the middleweight title in the UFC to mean something. You know, the WME now, the company that bought the UFC, WME IMG, they want to make this money back. It looks like, we're seeing some inklings that they may have buyer's remorse over the inflated price of the UFC that they paid. They're starting to, you know, maybe think that there's a lot of uncertainty here, a lot of risks that have come with this decision. There's the multiple lawsuits that the UFC has against them. There's the, you know, the volatility, fighters growing frustrated over pay, and that definitely plays into, you know, champions not defending their title and ultimately putting the UFC in a big spot, and the creation of these stupid interim titles that we're seeing now on every card. There's the uncertainty of the UFC TV deal. Who knows where they'll be next year, coming up in 2018. Was it going to be ESPN? Is it going to be Fox Sports 1? How much is the UFC going to get for that? Are they going to get what they originally wanted for that TV deal? I'd probably have to say, if I were a network, if I were in charge of making that decision, I would say no. You know, because the UFC hasn't really performed well, even with the viewership on, you know, Fox Sports 1 cards and so on. I mean, you know, there's been bad timing. There's Bellator 170 that they had to pull that fight card and put it on. I mean, so there's been a bunch of different things in terms of ratings competition during the free UFC shows. But nonetheless, I mean, it doesn't look good for the UFC. The picture really, really doesn't look good. Now that we know what the UFC is worth and we have a little bit more information as far as, you know, the money that was paid for the UFC and all this stuff. And so we could start to make a little bit better judgments, or we can have better analysis here on the program. But I got to tell you, this is just really, really irritating. It's really disgusting because Michael Bisping, who never wanted to fight Yoel Romero, lied about wanting to fight Yoel Romero. He's a liar because he said repeatedly that he would love to fight Yoel Romero before the year was over. He won the title, or he defended the title, quote unquote, against Dan Henderson in front of a hometown crowd, and got a very, very generous decision. Bisping's face looked like a hamburger meat. He had to go to the hospital afterwards. It was really embarrassing fighting Dan Henderson, who's a 46-year-old man. And he got that gift fight and that decision, which is very arguable, which is very questionable. Then he says afterwards that the UFC wanted him to fight in sometime in January, February. Yoel Romero, he said he wanted to spend more time with his family. Then he has this elective knee surgery, said he wanted to fight, was going to fight Yoel Romero. Dana White said that his next opponent will be Yoel Romero. Then the UFC gets their deal done with George St. Pierre. And sure enough, Michael Bisping, who's a coward, I mean, at this point, I don't see how anybody can call him anything less than a coward now. The present day Michael Bisping, He elects to fight Yoel Romero. I'm sorry, George St. Pierre. The UFC offered him George St. Pierre, and of course, what does he say? Yes, absolutely. He'll fight George St. Pierre. George St. Pierre, of course, has never fought at middleweight. This fight means absolutely nothing. It means absolutely nothing for the UFC middleweight division. It means absolutely nothing for, quote, Michael Bisping's legacy. You know why? Because George St. Pierre hasn't fought in almost 4 years. George St. Pierre hasn't fought at middleweight. George St. Pierre is not expected to win this fight. And if Michael Bisping beats George St. Pierre, who the hell cares? What difference does it make? He's not fighting someone that hasn't depreciated. You know, he's fighting someone who, unfortunately, will probably make him more money than he could have versus Yoel Romero, but it makes no difference because Michael Bisping, it's not possible to consider him a legitimate champion at this point. This is a real, real disgrace, and I really encourage everybody out there to not watch this fight. I may post something on the underground, and I may post something on Reddit, urging people not to watch this fight, because the UFC thinks that we're just a bunch of marks, that we're just gonna accept this because it has a big name in George St. Pierre. And it's funny in how they're even announcing this fight. It's not Michael Bisping versus George St. Pierre. It's George St. Pierre versus Michael Bisping. They're going to throw a big name at you, and somehow that's going to make us order the pay-per-view. That's going to make us, you know, spend $60 to watch this fight, which has no meaning, has absolutely no relevance whatsoever. It's insulting. It's insulting to our intelligence. If the UFC wants to have legitimacy, or if the new owners want to have legitimacy, and they want these titles to mean something, well, they got to start playing hardball with their champions. And that includes someone like Conor McGregor. You know, I've been very supportive of Conor McGregor. You know, he, out of all the champions, has the power to tell or to dictate the terms to the UFC. That power could run out. You know, he needs the UFC for his income, but nonetheless, he has some degree of power, okay? So I respect that. You know, Conor McGregor has fought champions in other divisions. He's fought two champions in two divisions. The guy's not afraid to fight. You can't question his willingness to fight like you can Michael Bisping's, okay? It's a different situation. But you know what? If he doesn't want to fight this year, if Conor McGregor is not going to fight this year, then the UFC has to start playing hardball and say, you know, you want to focus on this ridiculous Floyd Mayweather fight? Well, we're going to strip you. And life goes on. You know, we'll hold you up. We'll hold you to your contract. You won't make money. You'll be 30, 31, 32 years old. You won't make money. That somehow that lavish lifestyle starts to really, really get spent up very, very quickly, and then you're coming back to us for your income. It's just that's what the UFC has to do, and I'm in favor of that. So I'm not, you know, even though I can't stand Michael Bisping, I'm trying to be, you know, as fair as I possibly can, because the UFC has a real problem with their champions trying to dictate terms, and you can't have that. Okay. So WMEIMG has to do this and has to have these champions fight the number one contenders in their divisions, or else the damn ratings mean absolutely nothing. The damn rankings mean absolutely nothing. How could we say that the rankings mean anything when you've got someone like Michael Bisping who wants to fight a guy who hasn't fought in nearly 4 years and has never fought at 185? It is an absolute disgrace. And they says, well, anybody would do the same thing in my position. I'm trying to make as much money as I can. I don't have a responsibility to anybody but to make money. You know what? That's nonsense. He has a responsibility to the stakeholders. He has a responsibility to the fans. They are the number one stakeholders. And hardcore fans, a lot of people don't want to see this crap. And I really, really hope that there's a backlash against this. I hope that people start to wake up and say, you know, I'm not going to swallow this. I'm sorry. I'm not going to allow the UFC to think that they can put in a big name like George St. Pierre and they're going to get a million pay-per-view buys. Because, first of all, it's not going to happen. I don't think that this fight is going to get a million pay-per-view buys. I really don't. You know, Bisping's not that exciting of a fighter. Okay, he's not the best in his division. All right, he's arguably he's definitely the weakest champion that has ever existed, at least in the modern era of the UFC. And he doesn't deserve to have the title. He really doesn't at this point. And so it means nothing. And people are, I think, just not going to look forward to this matchup. Whereas if you have, you know, George St. Pierre that was fighting in his natural division, you know, George St. Pierre fighting someone like maybe Robbie Lawler first fight, and then, you know, fighting, and then continuing in the welterweight division, and then eventually fighting the champion, Tyron Woodley. That would be something that the fans would appreciate more, and perhaps more people would be willing to buy on pay-per-view. Although the UFC pay-per-view model is not good anywhere you look, okay? You know, possibly the days of the million pay-per-view buy are over. You know, that could very, very well be the case where, you know, you've got Conor McGregor, who's really the only person that is able to draw a lot on pay-per-view. He's got that it factor. People are just really, really anticipating him fighting. Okay, he's got a really good personality for what the UFC wants. He's able to draw, as I said, a lot of fans out there, and he's one of the few, if not the only, real remaining draw in the UFC. But, you know, look, his time, fighters depreciate very, very quickly. And who knows if we'll even be talking about Conor McGregor in another 2 years or so. We don't know that, okay? I mean, he could lose his next fight. He could get injured. I mean, who knows what's going to happen. He's certainly beatable. And, you know, who knows? Anything's possible. So I just really, really, as a fan more than anything else, because that's what we are here, I'm a fan first and foremost. It's an absolute disgrace to see this. And Michael Bisping got his way, and he made the choice to fight George St. Pierre. He made that decision, and he somehow thinks that, you know, if he's the first man to beat Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre, that's going to really solidify his legacy. You know what? These are not the same fighters as they were when they were champions. You know, Anderson Silva, who I'm a big Anderson Silva fan, you know, he hasn't looked good in his last couple fights. He's not completely shot. He could still be competitive with people in his division. He's not the same guy as he was when he was champion, when he had, you know, 15, 20, however many wins in a row, and was just beating everybody, and was just like the Michael Jordan of mixed martial arts. And Bisping beat him controversially. You know, I mean, Bisping, again, you know, at the end of, was it round three, was knocked out. He should have been knocked out. Anderson Silva should have won that fight via KO. And then George St. Pierre, as I said, hasn't fought in years, fighting in a division he's never fought before. He's going to be greatly outsized in this fight. It doesn't really mean anything. I mean, you know, you're delusional, Michael Bisping. What's going to define your legacy, what should define your legacy, is your reluctance to fight the best people, the best fighters in your division. And you know that there's no other champion in the UFC right now that is questioned. I mean, there's no other UFC champion that is so controversial as Michael Bisping because of the circumstances of how he won it and because his so-called defense against Dean Henderson and his preferential treatment that he has received from the UFC. I don't care if you say Michael Bisping's been around since 2003 or whatever, how long he's fought, training for the Ultimate Fighter in 2006, you know, been fighting in the UFC for 11-plus years. It doesn't make a difference because, again, you know, this is not the same fighter. This is not the same fighter that would fight anybody when it was convenient for him and now won't fight anybody. It's two entirely different people. Okay, and so we have to really, really acknowledge that this is just really, really bad. It really is, and again, I hope it backfires on them. I really do. But as I was saying before, you don't have controversial champions. I mean, does anybody question whether or not Daniel Cormier should be the light heavyweight champion? Does anybody question whether or not Conor McGregor is the lightweight champion after beating Eddie Alvarez? I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's no question about that. He's the champion. He's the best in the division at that point. You know, the 145-pound division, the featherweight division, that's a little different because of Conor being forced to give up the belt. And now, you know, you've got Max Holloway and Jose Aldo fighting for the belt. So whoever wins that fight is going to be a legitimate champion of the featherweight division. But, I mean, I just, you know, and then you look at Cody Garbrandt, okay, the 135-pound division. You look at, you know, Demetrius Johnson. There's no controversy. There's nobody out there. There's no naysayer saying that these fighters are not deserving of their belt. You know, there just isn't, and it's unfortunate. It really is. But this is what we have. You know, this is what the UFC, in part, the UFC has created. And they got to nip it in the bud. They really do. You have some decent fights on this card that I probably am going to watch. I'm definitely going to watch the fight. I don't know if I'm going to watch the entire undercard and fight pass and this that. You know, before you know it, it's like 7-8 hours of fighting, which is great in itself if you have that time, but. Most of us workers are besieged by, you know, work, by outside work activities, and just it's very, very difficult. It really is. But I'm looking forward to Khabib versus Tony. That, in many ways, is more desirable of a fight to see than the main event because. As far as I'm concerned, the main event, there really isn't any unfinished business. You know, Tyron Woodley won that fight versus Stephen Thompson. There's no question. He came very close to finishing that fight. And, you know, Tyron Woodley, I have a lot of respect for him because the UFC and the fans really have mistreated him. The UFC basically, you know, held a gun up to his head and said, you're going to fight Stephen Thompson two times. Because he tried to play the Bisping game too, and they wouldn't allow him to play the Bisping game. They actually allowed Tyron Woodley, or they forced Tyron Woodley to fight Wonderboy Thompson, and that's fine. And he did, and it was just this, you know, draw, whatever it was, But really, I felt that Woodley won the fight, and now he's fighting him again. And so he'll win more convincingly, and then he moves on. And so nobody questions his legitimacy as a champion. But the Khabib-Tony fight is more intriguing because of Tony, I think. I mean, you know what you're getting with Khabib Nurmagomedov. You're getting a super wrestler, just a superb grappler, who claims that he could have finished Michael Johnson at any point during the fight, and someone that you know can combine trips and takedowns and do whatever you want. You know, there's not a fighter really in the UFC that you can almost guarantee that he's going to get his fighter on the ground and hold them on the ground, except for Khabib Nurmagomedov. I mean, it used to be in the early days of MMA that. You know, dominant wrestlers and dominant grapplers would always get their fighters on the ground, like a Matt Hughes or, you know, a Mark Coleman. That's how they won their fights. And, you know, at some point or another during the fight, they're going to get their fighters, their opponents on the ground. Well, you know, Khabib Nurmagomedov is still like that, which really shows you his skill set, the superiority of his skill set. In 2017, in the modern era of mixed martial arts. But Tony, on the other hand, is just such a high-energy, unorthodox fighter that it wouldn't completely surprise me if he wins this fight. You know, I mean, you know, Khabib is a slight favorite going in, but because of Tony's intense style, his nonstop, you know, aggression and striking and submissions and transitional attacks, it would not surprise me in the least if he does win this fight. So, and then you've got, you know, the issue with Khabib's family not able to travel to the United States, his father not being able to. I mean, you'd be surprised how that could possibly, you know, play into a fight. You never know. You really don't. That's one of the more intriguing co-main events that I've seen that overshadows the main event. And we have to really, really hold our breath here because, you know, not to say anything about Tony's willingness to fight, but Tony has really pulled out of some fights over the course of his, you know, the last few years. These two were scheduled to fight, I believe, a few times, you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, let's not forget, it wasn't more than, what, a week ago or so that we had the Bellator 170 disaster, okay? Just an absolute disaster where Matt Mitrione pulled out at the last second. And still, there's no clear explanation as to what happened. I haven't seen anything. I really – there's no video back there. You know, it was just it's almost like a propaganda film or event put out by the North Korean government or something like. Who knows? You know. So you know, you've got that card, but if for my picks, and you could take them for what they're worth, most so-called MMA analysts are only right about 50% of the time. I'm going to say Khabib's going to be able to win. Maybe a finish of Tony in the late rounds or so. But again, I could be totally wrong there. You could very well see Tony win this fight. Would not surprise me in the least. Rashad is fighting. Is coming down to 185, middleweight, taking on Dan Kelly. I'm excited to see Rashad fight again. It's been almost a year since he fought. And, you know, he had that problem with the two commissions that wouldn't allow him to fight, kind of got screwed over there, but he's back, he's fighting, and you know, he wins this fight, and who knows what's going to happen in the middleweight division. You know, he can certainly capable of beating just about any middleweight out there, and he's already beaten Michael Bisping, a very, very close unanimous decision, I believe. But he could certainly beat – I'd love to see him in there against the Soldier of God. I don't think anybody beats the Soldier of God. Okay, Jacare and Rashad Evans, that would be a very, very good fight. That would be real – that would be a real, real good fight to see, just thinking about that. Versus Dan Kelly. Dan Kelly is a really, really tough fighter from Australia. He's a judo guy. He's been competing in judo for a very, very long time. A judo Olympian, too, I believe. A multi-time judo Olympian placed. He's only lost once, and he has a mixture of you know, submission victories, TKOs. So he's going to be a good, formidable opponent for Rashad Evans, but I think Rashad, he's got to be the favorite for that fight. And the last fight that I'm interested in is the Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt fight. You know, this doesn't really have any real implications for the divisions, but it nonetheless should be an interesting fight to see. This actually is a rematch between the two of them, where what's his name? Alistair beat Mark Hunt back in 2008. So... that, there you have it. That's UFC 209, folks. Okay, UFC 209. Want to thank Big John Ivy for appearing on the show last week. Now, we haven't been able to send out the show, even though a lot of people have listened to it. We haven't sent out the show because I'm still waiting on the transcript, and I want to do a nice little write-up on the show and get it out there and have people really comment on the race aspect or the racial criticisms that Jonathan Ivey has experienced, you know, due to his crane technique that he likes to use. There's been a lot of interest in the People's Elbow on the Underground. Well, if you recall, if you listened to when Jonathan Ivey was on the show last week, he explained to the audience how he came up with that and how, you know, he was at some gas station, and I think it was his manager or somebody said you should use the People Elbow. He didn't know what the People's Elbow was, and then sure enough, he was doing the People's Elbow when the time presented itself in competition. You got to love that. I'm a big fan of Jonathan Ivey, and even a bigger fan after I had the opportunity to interview him for an hour or so last week on Cardison's Corner, ladies and gentlemen. So I want to try to get that out there on the Underground and Reddit. I would love for Carson's Corner to be the official podcast of the Underground. For why is it not? Why are we not? Like, I can't understand that. You know, I mean, yeah, we could do some promotional stuff here and improve the show from a production standpoint. I understand that. But really, Carson's Corner was probably one of the original podcasts that ever was posted on the Underground. It was one of the first podcasts that was ever posted on the Underground, okay? And this goes back to 2005. Yeah, I mean, that's a long time. And, you know, it's very well known on the Underground, okay? It gets a lot of reaction, and I don't understand why Kurt doesn't do it. I mean, you know, these clowns, look, not everybody can do this. I mean, you know, anybody can call themselves a podcaster, any fanboy, you look at some of these so-called hosts, you see the picture of them, and it's just, they're just fanboys. That's it. I mean, they got somebody that's giving them money, or they're not hosts, they're not personalities, they've never done podcasting before, they're whatever, you know. But those guys, they don't last, and they're a dime a dozen, and you know, nobody really takes them seriously, and they're not authorities. Nobody will listen to their show really if they want to learn more about this person or that person. You know, and our show, our podcast would be perfect for the Underground Forum if we would just have the opportunity, if we could just get the opportunity, we'd be newsmakers, okay? Anytime that somebody's on this program and we ask them the very, very difficult questions, the very well-researched questions, well, their responses are like no other responses because they're not getting the type of questions that they are here on Carson's Corner anywhere else, okay? And then you throw in Bob Carson's brilliant analysis from both a fan's perspective, okay, an activist perspective, or we try not to include that a lot in the podcast. But, you know, all things are political. Whether you realize it or not, we're all political beings, and all opinions and analysis, it's rooted, I think, a lot of it in politics. Politics definitely is a shadow that casts all over us, no question about it. You know, there's that. There's my my take on things, just me being who I am. And the Underground Forum is the perfect place for this. It's my guess is that Kirk would probably get resistance. Kirk would probably get some sort of flack for having us on, or for having us being the podcast of the Underground. Same way Eddie Goldman, you know, if Eddie Goldman's name was attached to some of these sites, you'd see a real backlash from the real owners of the media, the UFC. Dana White, the real folks that have a hegemony over the MMA media, which is, again, really, really disgraceful. It really is. You know, when Dana White made the announcement of George St. Pierre versus Michael Bisping, when he made it on ESPN to God knows whatever shill they have on ESPN. Do you think for one second that he was asked a tough question? Do you think for one second that any opinion that was uttered on ESPN was of that Dana White could not accept and tolerate? Of course not. Dana White owns everything. He runs Fox Sports. He runs this Sirius XM channel. He practically runs MMA fighting. And, you know, maybe not Deadspin, but who cares? I mean, you know, they're all, by and large, subservient to Dana White. And you'll never hear them really question the GSP-Michael Bisping fight. Because they know if they did so in a way that we do here on Carson's Corner, that's it. Their press passes are revoked. Their careers are shut. I mean, Dana White has talked about ruining the careers of journalists out there. And isn't that a shame? That's really a shame. Because, you know, I mean, you like it or not, in, like, the world of politics, I don't think one person, and I could be wrong, but I don't think one person has the power to ruin a career or ruin a news outlet, like a website or a blog site or whatever. I don't think that would be the case in politics. I mean, it's a little different. I get it. You know, politics, it's a little bit more spread out, and you know, it's not as focused or as honed in as the so-called MMA media. But if one guy or if one blog or, you know, site started to really be critical of the Trump administration, which we're seeing now, those sites can continue to do journalism or what is considered journalism in the present day and age. Yeah, their life goes on for them. You know, I mean, their life, whatever. Trump is banning these news sites already. But when it comes to the so-called MMA media, that's not the case. Life doesn't go on for MMA fighting. Life doesn't go on for shit dog or whatever they call themselves. Life doesn't go on for these sites that stand up to the aggression of Dana White, that stand up to the self-righteousness of Dana White. It can't go on for them. And that's sad. And that's why we have what we have right now. Where, you know, Dana White can make announcements like this and make decisions like this. You know, the announcement comes after the decision, and the decision is a disgraceful and arbitrary decision, which again does not reflect the sport. It's not happening in the sport. It's like a dictatorship. You know, Dana White, they decide that it's going to be GSP versus Michael Bisping, and so now we've got to sit here and wait now for this to happen in another 5 months if we're lucky. It's really a disgrace. It really is. And you know, I want to just congratulate all these fanboys that have made this possible, because you know, we're not getting the mixed martial arts we should because of Dana White and because of complicity. Nobody has any balls, you know. Takes balls to do MMA podcasting, just like it takes balls to sell real estate. You know what it takes to sell real estate, folks? Brass balls. That's what it takes. Speaking of balls, I think it was Tony that showed could be balls today, brass balls at the weigh-in. Well, that's what you need sometimes in life, folks. All right. We've got about 90 seconds left here on Carson's Corner. Big thanks again to Sean Loeffler and Pierre Williams. And big thanks to you out there. If you want to friend me on Facebook, please do so. Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Also, you could follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com blogtalkradio.com/BobCarsonMMA. Follow us here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner for our podcasts. And yeah, make sure to interact with me. I'm always willing to interact with anybody out there. Okay, make sure to spread the show around. We need your help. We really do. You know what we're fighting against here? The Zufa zombies, these disgusting fake shills, one of which I had a big fight with, online exchange with a couple weeks ago. Just disgusting fake people, folks. Zombies, that's what they are. They're just propagandized. No mind, no propensity for individuality, folks. All right, thanks a lot. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.